You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, of course, and this is being recorded on Sunday, June 15th, 2025. You know, I've always had a tendency to reject theories that are too simple, especially when they get repeated over and over again by all kinds of people with really no understanding. Theories that I think end up, and I'm abusing the word theory, I know, that end up just being a substitute for knowledge. You know, Hitler's invasion of the Soviet Union was defeated by the winter, which is complete nonsense. But it's simple, it's lazy. The word czar comes from Caesar. Also not true. But today I want to deal with another one. And it turned out to be one hell of a rabbit hole. Does the English word slave and the various European variations come from Slav? It's a complex anatomy of an ethnic myth. Generally speaking, no, it doesn't. It is connected with the Normanist theory that somehow Russia was built from the outside by Scandinavians and Germans, which is a dominant theory in the West for the most part, but in Russia and a few other places, myself, of course, some Ukrainians, that it had its own autonomous society before the arrival of really what amounted to a handful of Scandinavians. That's the basic Normanist idea. The Normanists took over and organized the Slavs. So you can see a connection there. Because it's not just that Slavs were being by far the most numerous group in Europe then and now, but there's something about them. It fed into a lot of agendas. And this is why Slavs, I am not a Slav, of course, I'm a Celt, but why Slavs have often rejected this idea. There are obviously similarities. The English slave, the French esclave, German esclave, escravo in Portuguese, schiavo in Italian, and many others. You have similar words in Scandinavian, Dutch, Romanian, even Arabic. So, based on this similarity, there have been attempts to connect the Slavic ethnos with that term. But it's not merely an abstract or academic historical concern, because it is connected with one's view of the Slavic people, that is to say, either the Russian or the Ukrainian people, and it has been part of the anti-Slavic or anti-Russian agenda for a very long time. Same thing for the Mongols. Another huge myth. And this has acquired the scope of a real mythology. I do believe, however, that the connection between the two is more imaginary than real. And the argument's a very simple one. And that's its problem. Simple arguments never work. William of Ockham never said that the simplest argument wins. Never even came close to saying that. But it's very rare that a simple argument actually works. Slave and Slav sound similar throughout Europe, thus there has to be a connection. And that connection has to be that the word slave comes from Slav. During the Middle Ages, Slavs had a huge number within the slave trade, and that allegedly led to the use of their name as a designation for slaves in general all over the place. from Britain to, you know, the Vikings to everyone else. Sometimes it's claimed that various Western Europeans directly enslaved the Slavs. So when one Italian source came across the assertion that a corresponding Italian word allegedly comes from captives from Slavonia in the Balkans, from which the Venetians exported Slavic slaves. Decades ago, the Germans had a popular theory that this word arose as a result of the mass trade of Polabian slaves next to the German state in the 12th century. But it never ends there. It goes beyond it. There's all these far-reaching conclusions. The Slavs have the slave mentality, that they're an enslaved people. Hence, Western Europeans are their masters. So the 19th century, and this really didn't develop until the very late 18th and 19th century. You had rumblings of it under Peter the Great early on, but it really didn't take root until the 19th century. In Russia, and in Western European journalism, circulated the idea, even that the word Slav itself comes from a Latin or Greek word that means slave. And often is taken for granted. I've never been confronted with this. Many years ago, Willis Cardo said it to me. This must have been 2003 or something. And he said it like everyone knows it. Very flippantly, and I said, I don't think that's true. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. However, I have to say, the West all has vaguely similar terms for slaves. Now, where do we first see this? In South Italy, vaguely the second half of the first millennium AD, so after 600, that was under the Byzantine Empire in one form or another. It was sclavus in early medieval Latin. It gradually became established in the Latin language. And of course, that was the international legal, political, and commercial scientific language of various Western states at the time. Hence, it spread and has its form it does today. But in different languages, it appeared at different times, though, because Webster's Dictionary in English says it appears only in the 14th century. This is where I found myself falling into a rabbit hole, which I was willing to go. I go down rabbit holes every day. This is what rabbit holes are what I do for a living. That's why you guys send me money, to go down rabbit holes that no one else either can or will. Because simple arguments are never true. Simple theories are never true. The everyone knows kind of theory is never right, generally speaking. The Middle Greek period of its language, that part of the Byzantine Greek, Latin acting as an intermediary. Like in Romania, in 19th century, there was a campaign to bring more Latin words into the Romanian language. So the word sclav was borrowed from Latin and brought to the Romanian, but that's very recently. The earlier Romanian word for slaves, in fact, the borrowing from the Russian word, or rob, rabota, work. So the appearance of these words in Western European languages due to the allegedly abundant trade in Slavic slaves by representatives of these various Western European peoples, it's a problem. The word has a clearly traceable and understandable history. It didn't originate in the West, but within the Byzantine Empire. Now, there's two approaches here. The first is what we've already said, the medieval slave trade idea. We're talking about the 9th and the 10th centuries, primarily, around the formation of Kievan Rus. The Byzantines called the Slavs sklavinias, or the singular in Greek was sklavinoi, and that's similar to the one that became the source of the Western word slave. So the medieval Latin sklavinia comes from the Greek, which at the time was used to designate the Slavs. In different spellings, it was used by societies using basically Latin-based languages to denote the Slavs more generally. The second version is that the word slave in Middle Greek comes from the ancient Greek verb skleunen, meaning to obtain military spoils. In other words, plunder, what comes from military victory. Latin transliteration, it's skylero, or skylao. Literally, in this period, it means, I remove armor from a slain enemy. I won, therefore the spoils of war belong to me. So at the turn, that period where antiquity became the Middle Ages, the Roman Empire, those who were called by words that in ancient times denoted slaves, in fact, turned into serfs. So apparently a new word needed to be used to describe the slaves themselves, who apparently were entering the markets en masse as a result of endless wars and clashes that took place throughout Europe during this era, the Great Migration of Peoples. The very fact that the origin of the term has to do with war plunder kind of pulls the rug out from the idea that Slav and slave are similar. There's other Greek words meaning to rob, to take, whether, you know, without moral judgment. In Klug's, the Etymological Dictionary of the German Language, which came out in 2002 under Sklave, he says the Greek word Sklav or slave has the original meaning of captured as a result of robbery or captured in war, which are two very different things, but I guess they have the same result. So its origin has no connection with the ethnonym of Slavs as such. They're just homonyms. There's a lot of homonyms out there. There's way too many. The existence of a homonym, and people get very excited when they see a homonym in the ancient world, and they just assume that it must be true. There's a lot of similar or identically sounding words meaning two very different things. In Russian, you have, you know, kluch, which is like a stream or a source for a stream. And the same word also means an object for opening locks. Kosha could mean braid hair or an instrument for cutting grass. Zemla could mean many things. It's really the name of earth, but also means soil. You know, König, the king from Old German. The Russian word is very similar. They're quite close. Sometimes they even literally coincide, but they have different meanings. They're used differently and often have different origins. The fact that they sound similar is not really a sound to us. We didn't have tape recorders back then. So they sound to us in modern English, or whatever modern language you're talking about. They sound similar. They derive exclusively from modern English similarity. I've used the example before. There's a city in Spain called Murca. That's the origin of the term American, because of the similarity of names. Murca. In 1875, the Atlantic Monthly made the claim that the origin of the name America was from the Ameriquique tribe of Central America. And there was also a mountain range named for them. But that was a coincidence. That tribe was so insignificant that it was only discovered much later on. They couldn't possibly have had any connection to it. And if you look long enough, you're going to find lots of them. There's an old fake legend. I've heard it before. A Roman took an oath while getting his testicles squeezed. Yeah, you know, people talking like that, you always have to wonder, you know, where that came from. Why are they so willing to defend this? And that came solely from the fact that one of the older Latin words for legal truth, like pravda, legal truth, was testes. Well, that's not Latin at all, though. It comes from the Greek word for three, which is identical to the Latin tria. It had nothing to do with testicles, despite many people wanting it to be. Most of the legends of word origins coming from foreign terms that sound alike tend to be incorrect. Languages change. It might sound similar now. It didn't at its origin. And it also assumes that these, you know, early medieval languages were standardized. They were not. But it is a common phenomenon. So in medieval Byzantium, there was a new word associated with the verb meaning. We've already mentioned it. To seize military trophies, whatever you want to call it, the booty kind of thing. I take armor from my defeated foe. That began to refer to slaves and serfs. The older word that previously meant slaves was no longer used. We'll talk about this and hear more in a minute. So I needed a new term. The history of medieval Byzantium, especially during the history of the Slavic, Avar Slavic, and again purely Slavic conquest of Byzantium in the 8th century, this is supposed to be the origin of this term, the beginning of the raids into Slavic territory. Throughout this era, say late first millennium, the Slavs almost completely, pagan Slavs, almost completely captured many of the European provinces of the Eastern Roman Empire for a time, forming their own independent states on them. Some of them are still there. Roman and Byzantine provinces were captured by the Slavs. Dalmatia, Illyria, Pannonia, Dacia, and even in parts of Macedonia and Thrace. South Slavic states are now located on them, from Slovenia to Bulgaria. At the time, the Slavs captured many lands within the borders of modern Greece, including the cradle itself, the Peloponnese Peninsula, which from the time of the Slavic conquest till the 19th century, until the liberation from the Turkish Empire, formation of modern Greece, was called by a Slavic name, Morea, literally the land of the sea. Slavs early on captured the island of Crete, parts of Anatolia, Asia Minor. There were separate Slavic colonists in Syria, and some Slavic principalities came close to the capital itself. The feudal Bulgaria, or the principality whose center was the city of Thessaly, with the save Thessaloniki, which the Slavs called Solun, came very close to the capital city. Now, Roman sources say when the Slavs captured lands in Greece, the Greeks themselves were afraid to show up there. It didn't last, of course, but they certainly had a lasting presence. There's such a mention of Morea or the Peloponnese. The traces of former Slavic presence in modern Greece are pretty numerous. Toponyms of Slavic origin. One would be the city of Volos, which was initially given in honor of the Slavic god Volos or Veles, and a few others. The strategic khan of Maurice, that is to say the emperor of Maurice, 539-602, tells about the Slavic and Antic tribes close to Byzantium, I mean physically close to Byzantium, in the times before the Slavic conquests of the European part of the empire. What does he say there? He talks about the Byzantine attitude towards slavery, slaves, and let me quote from it here. The tribes of the Slavs and Antes, they live together, and their life is the same. They live freely, do not allow anyone to enslave or subjugate them. There are many of them in the country, and they are very hardy, easily enduring both heat and cold, rain, nakedness of body, and poverty. To those who come to them and enjoy their hospitality, they treat kindly and friendly, greet them cordially, then accompany them from place to place, protecting those who need it. If any harm is done to a guest through the fault of the host, through his negligence, the one who has entrusted the guest to him raises a battle against him and considers it his sacred duty to avenge it. Those who are in captivity with them, they do not keep in slavery indefinitely, like other people, but limit their slavery to a certain period, after which they release them if they want, or allow them to settle with them as free people and allies. And this way, of course, they gain friends. That was a dominant text in this era of Byzantium. There were many examples at the time that the Slavs were freedom-loving. They are in no way inclined to become anyone's slaves. That's also from the Strategikon of The Byzantines clearly did not associate the Slavs with slaves, even in the times where they had just begun to conquer Byzantium itself. Let alone when the Slavs occupied almost the entire European half of it. So, the version, this concept of the origin of the Middle Greek word slave, that being applied, or coming from, I should say, the Slavs, seems very, very odd. After the conquest of a significant part of Byzantium, the Slavs were not slaves there at all. But the very opposite. The worst case was free settlers, conquerors. Now, in Byzantium itself, those parts of it that continue to remain independent from the Slavs, you'll still find a lot of Slavic elites of Slavic origin. Military and political leaders, religious hierarchs, high-ranking officials, and even just simply rich and noble people of Slavic origin are everywhere. And there are several emperors. Maximian, whose nickname was Heraclius. And according to the Orthodox tradition, even the great Justinian himself had Slavic blood. In fact, Vanelin wrote about this in his very detailed work in his collection Anti-Normanism. I strongly recommend you go back to my discussion of the Normanist thesis, the foundation of Russia. It's a long time ago, but it should be on Radio Albion. So, just from that alone, the idea of the origin of the name of slaves connected to the Slavs, it doesn't stand up to even elementary verification in practice. Its real etymology comes from seizing military booty, wealth, armor. Captured in war, things taken in war, prisoner, or in some cases, as a result of a robbery. The Greeks used to call the Slavs Slavens, similar to prisoners. The word for prisoners, or sklavos. They're very similar words. This has something to do with Greek pronunciation. The sound combination SL, like in sleep, it's inconvenient for that era of Greek speaking. In Russian and English, it's pretty ordinary. So they usually would include a K in there. SKL instead of just SL. That would make the word more pronounceable. They would insert a sound K into the beginning of SL, which made it similar to every other Greek word, connected in meaning, you know. So, from the beginning, they were mere homonyms. I don't care that they're similar to each other. There's plenty of words that are similar to each other. The fact that modern English slave is connected to the Slavic ethnos, you know, I could, you know, I mentioned only just a few examples. You can come up with thousands of examples. They're curiosities. Homonyms are not a rare phenomenon in human languages. That's like saying the Russian word Odin, which is a word for a unit of something. That must have been the Scandinavian god Odin. You know, there's 100 others. I almost shouldn't have to explain this, but it's just become so deeply ingrained. The English word star and the Russian staraya, like in starets, meaning old. The English lip or lipa, which is the name of a tree. Many others. So there are thousands of them. We make jokes about them. But over the past centuries, this similarity has caused a truly colossal number of distortions. And sometimes, there's an agenda behind them. Anyone who's ever had a hostile intention towards the Slavs in general, even the Russians just in particular, usually used a variation of this. Now, you know I've rejected Hitler's table talks. I don't think they're legitimate. I don't even look at them. But that's in there. I think that's in there, or very similar kinds of collections. Napoleon said the same thing. Wilhelm said the same thing. Hitler may have believed it personally. I don't know. This is what we would call, you know, popular etymology. You want to explain the external similarity of words without considering the presence of any deep connections. The Slavs and among the medieval Jews were the sons of Canaan. A servant of servants he will be to his brothers. That's actually right in the book Petrushkin's The Beginning of the Ethnocultural History of Russia in the 9th to the 11th centuries. And you see it in academia as well. And one of the most prominent works, which is actually online for free in Russian, is From Sarmatians to Khazars, The Slave History of the Sclavini to the Calling of the Varangians. And just by its very, very wording, you know what that is, if you've been following me for a long time. This is a simple coincidence, of which there are many thousands. But it is exploited for propaganda, and it's been around for a long time. During the wars waged against the Polabian and the Pomeranian Slavs by the German emperors, a German author, Adam of Blementory, drew parallels between the Latin Sclavis and the Slavs. Now, he was just doing that. He didn't think there was any real connection there. He just was using it as a mockery, so sort of a parody. And many after him, you know, the Slav-German battles went back and forth on the German marches or the borderlands. Oftentimes, it wasn't even meant to be this deep thing. It was just, they're similar, and so we could make fun of it. Later, they tried to say that it was the same thing. The duration and persistence of their equating each other is sometimes impressive. One of the academics we're talking about here is Nazarenko. He says, in 2001, he says, there can be no doubt that a very large part of slaves entering European markets in the 9th century were of Slavic origin. This is clearly indicated by the very origin of the word slave in Western European languages, etc. That comes from his Ancient Russia on International Paths, Interdisciplinary Essays on Cultural Trade, Political Relations from the 9th to 12th centuries. Now, he doesn't dig any deeper. He doesn't, you know, it just seems, it's something that people say. And somehow by repetition, it's taken as truth. The Tsar Caesar thing is very common, and that's certainly not true. There's a vague connection, but it doesn't even make sense. If many of you who've read my stuff, you know what I'm talking about. But you can't use political propaganda. They do this with Ivan the Terrible all the time. Political propaganda isn't evidence. Stuff might be true, but it has to be taken very carefully. Statement of the Russian prince in the Tale of Bygone Years. The phrase which the famous Vladislav explained in 969, his decision to move from Kiev to Pereslavets on the Danube. That's a city where, according to him, the goods from different countries flow, from Russia. Fur, wax, honey, servants. Servants, slaves, same thing. You should also keep in mind that the word slave was very fluid. Slavery was not necessarily, people still think of black Africans in Alabama. Most slavery wasn't like that. But in this case, it follows the main goods that Russia supplied to the international markets in those years. Fur, wax, which was extremely valuable. They used it in shipbuilding, candles, and everything else. Honey had endless uses. And servants of various kinds. Well, the Slavs were the ones who were apparently exporting them, including some from the prince's own subjects, which, by the way, is nonsense. It says that during Svatoslav's time, Russia constantly waged various wars, usually victorious wars, with the Finno-Ugrins, with the tribes of like the Tichy and the Bulgars, and of course with the Khazars, including the famed defeat of the Khazar Empire. They did serve as a constant source of slaves. We're talking about POWs here, which Russia exported to the external market. But people get too excited when they come across this. Like Svatoslav just grabbed people on the street. reports of mass captures of whom in the same war with the Khazars are transparent. And not all of them were Slavs. The residents of Khazaria or the Finns or others defeated by Svyatoslav. There's a work called Slavery and Tribute Among the Eastern Slavs, again only in Russian. And he argues there that servants in Russia were precisely the slaves of foreign tribes bought or captured in battle. The ancient understanding is, if I spare your life, you owe your life to me. But it was often very easy to buy your way out. You know, this slave, having a slave relationship was expensive, and it did put legitimate responsibilities on the part of the owner. But you had, in the pagan Slavs, plenty of slave trade. But there were all kinds of interpretations about it. The Normanists and the idea of relationship, these words continues to sound this categorical, even aggressive form that these things are absolutely identical. That the word slaves from the ethnonym of the Slavs. There's a deep connection between the Normanist idea and those who believe that the Slav-slave connection. Now the Slavs, we're going up north now. The Pomeranian and Polabian regions were very powerful. They were very warlike peoples. These were the peoples who were fighting with the Germans, or the Saxons and Franks, Scandinavians, Danes, Swedes, Norwegians, occasionally together with them against others. They fought off large coalitions, which along with Germans and Scandinavians included some Slavic tribes. There wasn't a unified Slavic entity at the time, which also harms the theory that Slav just meant everybody who was a part of the Slavic tribe, since Slavic tribes had all kinds of different names. So the assumption there is that they were all called Slavs, which isn't true. I'm going to quote the Slavic Chronicle from Helmund, the early Middle Ages. Aldenburg is the same as Stargard in the Slavic language, that is, the old city. Situated, as they say, in the land of the Vagrs, in the western part of the Baltic coast, in the border of Slavia. This city or province was once inhabited by the bravest men, since being the head of Slavia, and has its neighbors, the peoples of the Danes and Saxons. And always, all wars either began first itself or took them upon itself to others who began them. So now in southern Europe, now in northern Europe, the Slavs were seen as warlike, not slaves, but those possibly even exporting slaves, usually POWs from the Khazar Wars. But when the Baltic Slavs, who, you know, are kind of a historical memory now, they were actively involved in trade and diplomacy. Their women were, and I understand this, in great demand, even in Scandinavia. Sent their daughters for Slavic princes, in return received daughters of Slavic kings for their sons. There are plenty of reports of this among chronicles of the time, medieval sources of the time that aren't propaganda. The most publicized medieval pirates are the Scandinavians, but the Baltic Slavs also conducted the same kind of aggressive robber activity, pirate activity at sea, including against the Scandinavians. Sometimes the Slavs attacked someone together with the Scandinavian warriors, and in fact, a lot of this information has been preserved. Baltic Slavs are often come under the name of Vents. That was what they were called by the neighboring non-Slavic people, Wends. Now, they were among the Normans who attacked England and Ireland. You have some of the worst horror-filled English texts from the Norman plundering, the 8th to the 13th centuries. Among the attackers, in addition to Danes and Norwegians, directly list the Vens as mercenaries. The ecclesiastical history of Orderic of Atelius, In the first half of the 12th century, says this. There are all kinds of Slavic tribes that were involved in this kind of thing. Roger of Wendover wrote in the first half of the 12th century in his work Flowers of History, in the year 838, God sent the Danes, Norwegians, Gutlanders, Swedes, Vandals, and Frisians, and they destroyed the land of England for almost 230 years. I like the use of the word Vandals here, These aren't the same Vandals from North Africa. Vandals usually went to refer to the inhabitants of the southern Baltic. Sometimes they would use it in place of Vends, the collective name for the local tribes. This also makes it more complicated because not all writers use the same word for a collection of people. Matthew of Paris said the same thing in his great chronicle. Hakon the Good and his saga reports on the attacks of the Vends, and he refers to Vendish Vikings on the Scandinavian lands. The word Vikings is not an ethnic term. It just meant pirates, sea robbers, in the Western Baltic and the North Sea in the early Middle Ages. In fact, the quote is, "Then King Hakon sailed east along the coast of Scania and ravaged the country, took ransoms and taxes, and killed Vikings wherever he found them, both Danes and Wends." Further, there are several texts of German chroniclers in which the Slavic pirates of Rügen and neighboring lands sometimes were called some very dangerous, these are all pagans, of course, some of the most pagan, dangerous and bloodthirsty robbers of the Baltic. Yes, there's some propaganda there, the German reports. They were both invincible and merciless. The island of Rügen. And you have this reported by Adam of Bremen in his The Acts of the Archbishops of the Hamburg Church. They were all around the same period of time, on the 8th to the 10th century here. In his work, section 4, he says this: "Three islands should be distinguished from those islands that lie opposite the Slavic land. The first of these is Fembre, located opposite the region of the Wagrians and the island of Lalland, and can be seen from Aldenburg. The second is opposite to the Wiltsi, owned by the Rani or Runes, a very brave Slavic tribe without whose decision or according to custom no public decrees are undertaken. They are feared because they are in close contact with the gods, or rather with demons, to whom they pay more veneration than to others. Both these islands are full of pirates and bloodthirsty robbers who don't spare anyone who sails past, all captives, whom others usually sell, they kill." Helmund in the Slavic Chronicle, in the very beginning, the second part, he says the Rani, called Rugiani, are the strongest tribe among the Slav, the only one who has a king. Without their decision, no public matter can be accomplished. They are so feared because of their special favor of the gods, or rather idols, to them was surrounded with much greater honor than other peoples do, meaning other Slavs. In addition, the Slavic people are characterized by an insatiable cruelty, which is why they cannot stand peace and disturb the countries adjacent to them, both from the land and from the sea. Now, these same Slavic Vends attacked Denmark and Sweden. They plundered cities just like any other Viking would do. In 1043, they attacked the Danish city of Ribe. Now, there's a Polish article, Slavic Piracy in the Baltic, by Marus Zulumnik. The pirates organized expeditions to capture loot or slaves. The rich were valuable prey, since the sea robbers could receive large ransom for them. The rest of the captives were sold at auction. A large number of captives after each expedition led to the fact that the prices of slaves for the Slavic markets dropped sharply. The situation was different, for example, in Denmark, where prices immediately soared. The reason for this was a shortage of slaves after the Slavic attacks. Prisoners captured in clashes with the Poles were sold either to Denmark or to Runyon, and prisoners from the North Danes were mainly sold to the west and the south of Europe. The more valuable slaves, such as the wealthy, were treated better than the others, who were used, among other things, for hard labor, such as building ships, that were often abused. In Thietmar, we read how some hostages were treated. Their anger was transmitted to the other corsairs. In the morning, they cut off the nose, ears, and hands of the priest and the rest of the hostages, and they threw them overboard into the bay. That's from the Slavic Corsair Expedition undertaken in 1136. Under the leadership of the Pomeranian prince Ratibor Konugal. It was at the time the Danish city, now part of Sweden, on the border with Norway. And that's the source of the quote I mentioned. The pagans didn't keep their word. They took all the people, men, women, children, killed many, especially those who were too weak or of low origin, or those who were too inconvenient to take with them. And of course, they took all the money in the city. That's how the sources at the time, this is supposed to be the time, by the way, when the Slavs were now being associated with slaves, that the word slave came from the Slavs. This is this exact same period of time here. That's why I'm quoting them. That's why this is a rabbit hole. This is how the sources characterize the situation caused by the systematic Slavic pirate attacks on Denmark just before the campaigns of Vladimir I to Rujan. At the time, the pirates went wild from the borders of the Slavs as far as Idor. All the villages from the east abandoned by its inhabitants lay in ruins with uncultivated land. Zealand, from the east to south, gaped with emptiness. On Fiona, there's nothing left except a few inhabitants. Now, one of the more important reasons why the famous Danish king Valdemar, who died in 1182, waged wars with the Runians, was that they were like Vikings. They were just Slavic Vikings. They constantly ravaged his country and took the population captive, often in very large numbers. It was the constant attacks from the pagans from Runian that forced Valdemar, by the way, who received his name in honor of the Christian Russian prince Vladimir Monomakh, whose descendant through his mother he was, by the way, to begin to wage wars with them. Before Valdemar's counterattack, the Runians put almost half of Denmark to fire and sword, captured several cities, and imposed tribute on the Danish provinces, including the island of Lolland. And they even reached with the capital of Denmark at the time, Roskilde. The Danish chronicles tell in detail about the brutal attacks of the Vens. The Danes' retaliatory campaigns were successful. As a result, Rugen was baptized for the first time in 1168. The war with the Slavic pagan pirates at the beginning of the 12th century, although this had been around for a while, was also waged by the famous Polish king, Bolesław Krzywoszy, who died in 1138, who attacked their bases from the continent. There was valuable trade going through there. It had to be destroyed. So in addition to eradicating the Vikings, he fought against the political independence of the Pomeranian lands and tried to Christianize them, sort of, like a second front against the Slavic pagan Baltic. In other words, the exact same thing was happening in Northern Europe that was happening among the Turkish tribes in Southern Europe. So why would the Slavs be singled out? You had just as many slaves in Northern Europe as from the Slavic populations. Except in Northern Europe, the Slavs were doing the slaving. Regular Slavic plundering of Scandinavia, Denmark, Sweden, etc. continued even after Valdemar and Bolesław were gone. The customs of the Slavic Viking, piracy in the southern coast of the Baltic, they weren't suppressed for a very long time. And even afterwards, the reports would show up about a raid here and there in the coastal areas of the Scandinavian states. As a result, key parts of Sweden and Denmark were devastated and completely depopulated. You clearly see why I'm saying this. The argument goes that because of the raids into southern Russia, the bulk of the slaves at the market were Slavs. Well, therefore, that's where the word came from. Now I'm talking about almost the exact same phenomenon occurring in Northern Europe. But they still use the word that sounds like Slav for slave. So that can't be the connection. The most famous, like the Blackbeard of the Baltic, Klaus Storpecker. There's a lot of legends there, He was actually at Rugen, in a village with a clear and natural name for Russians, Ruskovitsa. He was born on the mainland of Vismar, former Slavic land. Vistimir actually was the city in the Slavic language. But in this era, the Rugen had been actively Germanized, but the traditions of sea piracy continued to live on it. Large cities of the Baltic monarchs were afraid of Storchbecker's flotillas. Marguerite, Queen of Denmark, had a series of defeats from him. She had to hire crusaders to fight him. It was almost as if the Slavic Vikings weren't going away, no matter how much they tried to Germanize the area. Now, of course, there were also attacks on them from the Scandinavians or other inhabitants of the Baltic Sea coast. The Danes, for example, during the war with the Slavs in the 8th century, destroyed the capital of the Obotrite Federation. The city of Rerik took all its artisans to the new capital of Hedeby. There was a surge of handicraft production there as a result. The Danes took part in the crusade against the Slavs in 1147. But then a significant part of their fleet was burned near that very same place, near Rügen, and they went home with nothing. It was Valdemar who destroyed Arkona and other centers of the Rügen, almost like a Rügen movement. Like the Vikings are a movement. Yeah, you had periods of coexistence, but there were plenty of wars. Wars of plunder, robberies. But there was also, you know, robbery by other means. Trade and alliances, and plenty of weddings. Here's another quote from the Slavic Chronicle of Helmund, from the Slavs of northern Europe and the Baltics. For Denmark consists in the most part of Ireland, which are surrounded on all sides by the sea that washes them. So it's not easy for the Danes to protect themselves from attacks of sea robbers or Vikings, because there are so many capes there. Very convenient for the Slavs to arrange for themselves a refuge and hiding places. Coming out from here secretly, they attack the unwary before their ambushes. For the Slavs are very skilled in organizing these secret attacks. Therefore, until recently, these Vikings, this robber custom was so widespread among them that completely neglecting the benefits of agriculture, they directed their always ready for battle hands to sorties on the sea, their only hope, and put all their wealth on ships. They don't regard the attacks of the Danes as anything. On the contrary, they even consider it a pleasure for themselves to engage in hand-to-hand combat with them. It really wasn't until the 16th century, maybe a little bit before, that these Baltic Slavic tribes, you know, disappeared or were assimilated. They were absorbed into the new European civilization that came to these lands from the south, together with the Germans. Therefore, you can't tell me that the word Slav comes from this rush of Slavic slaves on the market in southern Europe in this period of time. The early Middle Ages, let's say between the 9th and the 11th century. You had plenty of raids, depopulating raids, on parts of southern Russia, even in the early days of Kievan Rus. The Jews were a big part of this. But why would that be where the word slave comes from, if it's connected to the Slavs? Because the exact same was going on in Northern Europe. But it was being done by the Slavs. It doesn't make any sense, and it's a very powerful argument. I don't care how similar they sound. That's not, you know, a scholar has to look past that. So the slave trade has always been one of the most profitable areas of trade. In all ancient and early medieval countries that moved from the savage societies to early forms of state rule, slaves existed. But the word slave is vague. It could be prisoners captured as, you know, being POWs. It could be local residents who are real criminals or debtors. You didn't have prisons back then. Servitude was a result of criminality. And it existed certainly in early Slavic states as well. Some of the Slavic slaves can actually end up in the international slave market. Yeah, because they're by far the most numerous people in Europe in those years and today. So of course they're going to be theoretically a significant share among European slaves. Still though, the idea that Slavs were the most widespread slaves in medieval Europe really doesn't have a ton of evidence behind it. The problem is, it's based on the hypothesis, and I've come across, you know, census figures in some places. There's always words used equivocally there, but anyway, quite often it's based on the terms for slave coming from Slav is already assumed. In various European sources, there are many references to slaves and captives of completely different nationalities, Saxons and Alans, Goths, Sarmatians, Greeks, Franks, Angles, Arabs. Olaf Tryggvason, one of the most famous sagas, tells the life of one of the most popular heroes of Scandinavian epic, Olaf the First, one of my favorites, who died in 1000. According to this, at a young age, Olaf himself, together with his mother, traveling by sea, is captured by robbers, Istians, after which they both ended up sold into slavery. Then Olaf lives as a slave for several years, and completely by chance runs into his uncle, Sigurd, who recognizes him. Sigurd, at that time, was a servant in the retinue of King Prince Vladimir I, Vladimir the Great. And so it wasn't difficult to redeem the future king of Norway from slavery. In the early Middle Ages, the collapse of the Roman Empire in places in Northern Europe where you didn't really have a tightly knit civilization at all. Slavery was something hanging over people. But what did it mean? Was it permanently? How were you treated? Was it no different than getting a job? You just really can't quit? You know, you can't use the black African concept very, very much. You had representatives from the upper class of society turned into slaves overnight. There's an example from the great Bede the Venerable about Pope Gregory the Great. As you know, the liturgist who died in 604. And this is what he says. Well, St. Gregory was once told that the soft-haired, blue-eyed boys who were sold as slaves in Rome were English by nationality. He said they were not English, but they were in fact angels. Angles. A pun on, etc. When he was told that they were from Derry, he decided they should be turned from the wrath, that is, diiri, a pun from Latin, diri and diiri, of God by the gospel, and sent the monk Augustine to Britain to spread the good news there. Slavery hung over everyone's head at the time. Wherever civilization broke down, now, where civilization existed, say the Byzantine Empire, you did have certain forms of servitude, especially when you don't have prisons. Everything was either done through servitude or fines. Or execution. You know, the severe crimes. What do you need prisons for? You actually had to go and work for the person who you've harmed. Which is very different from, that's the ancient understanding. There's a collection out there called Slavs and Scandinavians. It's translated from the German into Russian, 1986. The chapter there is simply called Slaves. Rimbert, who's Ansgar's successor as Archbishop of Hamburg Bremen, said this in 870. When he first arrived in the land of the Danes, he saw a place where he had built a church for the Christian community that had arisen earlier. That place will be called Slizowitz. A multitude of captive Christians dragged in chains, among them with a certain nun who, noticing him from afar, knelt down and bowed her head before him many times in order to express her reverence for him and to implore him to show compassion for her lot. When she began, so she might see that she was a Christian, to sing psalms in a loud voice, the bishop, overcome with pity, cried out for the Lord for help. As a result of his prayer, the fetters which she was bound fell to pieces all at once. But since she didn't flee immediately, the pagans who were guarding them seized her with ease. Then the holy bishop, moved by fear and love for her, began to offer the pagans who were guarding her various things, whatever he had on him, as ransom for her. But they would agree to nothing unless he gave him his horse, his own horse that he was riding at the time. He didn't resist. He immediately jumped from the saddle and gave the horse with all of its trappings for the captive, allowing the latter her freedom immediately after he had ransomed her, then allowing her to go wherever she wished. Again, Slavs were not Christians in any of these years. A lot of these were residents of Western Europe captured during Norman attacks. And some of them were members of the Schleswig Christian community. A lot of people forget about the Obotrites, that Obotrite Federation, conquered eventually by Henry the Lion, and then subdued, they fled in droves to the Pomeranians and Danes, who mercilessly sold them to the Poles, Serbs, and Czechs. This is a period when one of the sons of the deceased Obotrite king, Nicolot, took the oath before Henry the Lion and included his lands in the German state. Apparently then, some Obotrites preferred to leave rather than swear fealty. It was they who suffered the fate described. It's interesting in that example that the buyers of Slavic slaves are also Slavs, since the Slavic lands were not subjected to such a cataclysm at the time. There's so many examples of this. There's treaties from the second half of the 9th century. Again, this is all when, remember, we're talking about a time period when the connection between Slavs and slaves was developing. It was somewhere between the 9th and 11th centuries, roughly. That's where it had to have started. That's when the slave raids in Slavic lands were at their peak. Three treaties, 840, 880, and 888, between Venice and the Frankish emperors. The Venetians were forced to undertake obligations not to sell slaves from imperial lands. It indicates, because there's three of them, that the Frankish state was a source of a significant number of slaves. Nazarenko does mention this, by the way, in his 2001 book, in a chapter, Rus on the Road from the Germans to the Khazars. Now, what kind of slaves were these? Probably victims of captures by the same Normans and maybe the Slavs during their border wars with the Germans. According to medieval sources, the Slavs went on campaigns to German lands all the time and captured slaves there. So the point's been made. It doesn't make sense. Now there's an Arabic word, saklab, which means slave. But Slav is as sakliba, sakliba. I know I'm butchering it, I don't care, I don't know how to pronounce it. So that pair even existed in medieval Arabic, vaguely similar. But that arose from the Arabic borrowing from the north, from the Western Europeans or the Greeks or whoever. Similar to the ethnonym of the Slavs, you know. And the Arabs knew the Slavs too, in their wars against Byzantium. And during their own travels, expeditions to the Volga, the Black Sea region, etc. That same confusion passed into the medieval Arabic language. Actively participating in the Mediterranean trade, the Arabs certainly bought slaves from Western, Northern, and Central Europe. Transported to the Mediterranean region by Jewish slave traders, this was purely a Jewish concern. And regardless of their nationality, following the Latin and Greek-speaking traders were called Saklabs. Now, there are some who want to push the idea that these were mainly the same Polabian and Baltic Slavs that I mentioned above, conquered and allegedly sold en masse by the Germans, but there's no reason to believe that. This is the 9th century, which saw that was the height of the Arab slave trading. Polabian and Baltic Slavs hadn't been conquered yet. The first active attempts, now, despite some of them being allies of Charlemagne, not all of them, but the first active attempts to conquer these lands were made by Charlemagne at the end of the 8th century. That was a very loose conquest. This is in the fringes of his empire. They were pretty much independent until the 12th century. At the same time, during the wars with the Germans, they were constantly going on retaliatory campaigns. Their lands were only part of the German Empire at the end of the 13th century. There's no mention of any systematic mass removal of Slavs by the Germans, even after their lands became a part of that empire. The Slavs were ordinary subjects in it, although some of them were allies. There were POWs on both sides. In general, the Polabian Slavs could end up on the slave markets, but that wasn't interesting. There were slaves from everywhere. Especially the Christian Germans, who were captured on land by the Slavs and from sea by the famous Normans. Among whom were also the Vents, the Slavs from the Baltic. The fact that the Arabs, often called as Sakliba, just simply people from the northern or central Europe, is the fact that the Arab author Al-Masudi in the 10th century attributed to the Namchin, the Germans, the Hungarians, they gave them the same term, the Sakliba. Abu Mansur, the 10th century, says, "The Slavs are a red-colored tribe with light brown hair. They border on the country of the Khazars, on the peaks of the Rum Mountains. A red-colored person is called the Slav because of his similarity to the color found in Slavs." That is, he openly says that all fair-haired, red-haired Europeans are Slavs, or Sakliba, for him. So in the Arab language, I guess there isn't a connection, after all. Arab slavery was a very strange phenomenon. They enslaved far more Africans than anybody. Because of their low IQ, they couldn't do very much. Europeans were a different matter. The northern slaves often rose to the highest levels of the social hierarchy. In 762, the ambassador Abd Firri, who had the nickname of As-Saklabi, the same word we've been using, arrived in Baghdad from recently conquered Spain. He was a slave. I don't know how much a slave you can be. For centuries, Arab rulers formed elite military units from northern slaves, personal guards, and their most loyal guards. And they would often receive many high positions in the state, even taking second after the Sultan. They ruled entire regions themselves. What kind of a slave can you be if you could do that? And all this is happening when allegedly the Slav slave thing was being connected amongst the Greeks and hence the rest of the world. I've mentioned before the verb is sklavos, to obtain trophies. It was not really a POW, but what you gain from a military victory. Slaves and Slavs, yeah, they sound similar, and that's about it. People talk about it as if this is the most axiomatic fact, and it's just not true. But now, it's being used for purely polemical purposes. The point I'm trying to make through all this, this is why it's such a deep rabbit hole, is that the Slavs were every bit the conqueror, even more so than anybody else, and the tribal raids into South Russian areas. There's no way the Byzantines could have made that connection. So I mentioned before, somehow in around the 6th century, the Byzantines replaced in their language the former Roman word, serf, which means slave, with something like sklavos. And that spread throughout the then huge territory of the former Eastern Roman Empire, right up into Italy and further. Of course, this doesn't mean that they identified with Slavs, with slaves, which would be, you know. Then in the lands of the Western European peoples, new peoples began to form, based on the intermixture of former Romans and the barbarians who destroyed their empire. Somehow, they were also accepting of that connection. The fact that they were pagans for a long time didn't help matters, of course. But that's a very shaky basis. And it wasn't just that the words were connected, that they were very closely, etymologically connected. No, it meant the Slav, its nature of the Slavs. And that became evident only really in the 18th century. The victories of Peter I and the transformation of Russia into an empire. But, you know, in the Seven Years' War, Patriotic War of 1812, World War II, they failed to turn Slavs into slaves. There wasn't slavery, really, within the Slavic mindset, except maybe as a way to make money. At the time where people started talking about this connection of the words, late 18th century, beginning of the 19th century, almost all Slavs had been deprived of their national and state independence. This is how it started to catch on, not in mid-Greek, not in the 9th century Sicily. Balkan Slavs were under the Ottoman Empire. Certainly it was a form of slavery. The blood tax was a form of slavery. Slavs of Central Europe under various German principalities. Many Slavs have been Germanized once that Viking group that I mentioned, you know, kind of petered out. The loss of national self-identification. Let alone the partition of Poland. Completely eliminated from the map of Europe. This is roughly the time, not before then, that people started making that connection. There was no scholarly connection. It was a polemical connection. But to talk about the Slavs being so dominant in the slave markets in one particular area, in one particular time, they had to come up with a new word for slavery, so just use Slav, despite all the different tribal names, there is no justification for this. And it developed at a time, along with, you know, because it's connected with the Normanist theory, it developed really because of external circumstances, not because of any scholarly insight. The origin of the term Slav, you don't have time really to get into it. There's a mythological source, you know, Slavia, the alleged dwelling place of the gods. There's very little known about pagan, Slavic paganism. There aren't many things written that survive. My favorite is, of course, their connection to their you know, logos is Slovo. That's also a connection. That makes more sense than anything else. Slovo, word, both in a literal and a figurative sense. Your own people is home, everyone else is alien. Certainly among the ancient peoples, it was everywhere. That's why the Germanics were called Niemtzi, or they couldn't understand the language. You know, they were mutes. Slovo meant that they were part of your world. Slavs or Slovian were people who speak words in our language. So therefore, the non-Slav is really a mute. Might as well be mute. The Albanians have something similar, Shiparet, something like speaking clearly. And of course, there's a simple word, Slava, which also means glorious. Glorious warriors, glorious fighters. It's used in liturgy all the time. Let alone the concept that it comes from the rivers. The Sluja, Slava, Slavitnica. Saulos, it's another word, it means nation. The Indo-European or the Aryan root, Klu, which can mean a lot of things as a root. Rumor, fame, to hear. So it's connected with communication, but the communication of something in particular. Slavs are a famous people, people who one hears about, people hears glorious things about. The theory, therefore, that Slavs were called as such because of their overwhelming presence in the slave trade at a very specific period of time, a very specific place, just by that reason alone, can't work. To the extent that they had to jettison their older word for slave and then adopt this one. Adopt Sklavia. Slavne means beautiful, mighty. This is why the rivers were named for this. There's no way you could ever convince me that people who want to make that connection don't have a further agenda. It's not just Slav comes from their being slaves, but that they're slavish people and hence should be conquered. There's an ideological component to that. And that kind of makes things more difficult than they should be. Anyway, I am finished. I've gone down the rabbit hole for you. I cited a lot of scholarly and very ancient sources. I hope I made my point. Thank you very much for listening. If you made it this far, I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.